Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. Exterior Home Solutions, local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for a new garage, windows, siding, a roof, contact Exterior Home Solutions today by picking up the phone, giving them a call at 865-524-5888. Or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We have a whole lot to get into today. Huge basketball win at Alabama. A big basketball week coming up with South Carolina and Kentucky. The NCAA has paused NIL-related investigations. What's that really mean for Tennessee? Tennessee, on the other hand, starting a nonprofit that can quickly mobilize into paying salaries to student-athletes. And then, of course, changes coming for football in 2024. Without further ado, let's get into it. Rob Lewis, what a win for Tennessee basketball on the road at Alabama. Led by about 10 with a couple minutes to go in the first half, Alabama goes on a 12-0 run, takes the lead into the halftime break. Tennessee comes back and then really puts the clamps on statistically the best offense in the country in the second half. And Tennessee comes out of Coleman Coliseum with an 81-74 win.
It was a great win, and just, you know, watching it unfold, I didn't, you know, the sequence you're just, you know, referencing there, Eric, you know, the 12-0 run for Alabama to close the first half, and you know, just start slow. You know, it did not feel like Tennessee was getting out of there with a win when it was 58-51, you know, midway through the second half there, and they just put the clamps on them defensively in a way that I guarantee you Alabama probably doesn't think anybody in the country could do. They hit three shots in the last 14 and a half minutes. I mean, that was just, it was remarkable. And, you know, totally sucked the life out of a building that was rocking and rolling. I mean, that was a hostile environment against a really good offensive basketball team. And man, I mean, Tennessee just absolutely toughed one out on a night when they weren't, I mean, they scored 81 points, but they weren't particularly good offensively. I think that was maybe more reflection of pace. Than Tennessee really shooting the eyes out. But I can't say enough or stress enough, you know, what kind of a statement I thought that was for Tennessee.
Anybody that's watched Tennessee play the last several years that didn't watch the end of the first half and the start of the second half when they went down, you know, by near double digits, not quite, but close, and didn't think that, you know, that thing was trending poorly the other direction and, you know, didn't have that kind of, oh, here we go again mentality, I think is full of themselves. Like, it's just a tough place to play. Tennessee struggled at Coleman over the years. They're just not making enough shots. Everything's trending Alabama's way. And then, you know, you start, you know, making a couple of plays, and it started with the Mayshak kind of, you know, combo play where he makes the three and then gets the steal, and then they get – you know, the 3-point play with what they do. I mean, it just kind of flipped the whole thing around. And do you think, you know, that the fact that you've got so many veterans that have kind of been through it, that helps in this situation?
Well, I think that's a huge part of it. You know, like withstanding foul trouble, you get your, you know, Tobe picks up his second foul with 12 minutes left. Jonas is already on the bench, you know, with two in the first half. By the time that happens with Tobe, Josiah steps up and, you know, has 13 rebounds in the game. I mean, I think that's a guy, you know, when that foul trouble happened, Josiah, fifth year guy, he knew he had to go to the glass. He knew he was going to have to play a lot at the five. And, you know, Tennessee was able to handle that. I thought that was a reflection of the maturity. I mean, Santiago, this guy, I mean, how many, you talk about maturity, how many plays did he make where he, you know, slapped it, you know, out of somebody's hands?
Yeah.
You know, stole one from behind, just created possessions, you know, for Tennessee. And I think that's the kind of little things that are a reflection And Zakai just, you know, continuing to battle, didn't shoot it great. I think he was 5 of 18, you know, had a couple of turnovers in the first half, but just continued to battle. And, you know, I thought all those, your veterans came through, and Rick really went out of his way to stress that and to praise those guys, you know, after the fact, because it was just, you know, Zakai said it, we just weren't going to let ourselves lose this game. And they didn't. I mean, on a night when they weren't particularly great offensively, they hold Alabama to 3 made shots in the last 14-27. It was – watching it unfold, it was crazy.
Yeah, and one of those shots shouldn't have counted, right? It seriously kicked me out of bounds. So they missed that call there. To me, Rob, my biggest takeaway from all of it is simply this. Tennessee's just a tougher team. Tougher collection of kids physically and mentally. And it showed down the stretch. I mean, when they had to make plays, they made plays. When they had to answer, you know, that they never let Alabama have any kind of run that last, you know, 5-6 minutes. Every time Alabama scored, Tennessee had an answer on the other end of the floor offensively. Yeah, it wasn't great, but, you know, if you're going to hold a lead, you've got to answer. And Tennessee found a way to answer in a variety of, you know, free throws and connecting, you know, on an isolation play in the middle of the paint. I mean, they were just a mentally tougher basketball team, you know, in a hostile environment on Saturday night, which I think if you're a Tennessee fan, to me, that's your biggest takeaway as you head into March, is just the mental and physical toughness of this basketball team that was on display.
I will say this, before you go, you pivot. I think it's massive that South Carolina beat Florida. And here's why I say this, because I think it's easy to kind of fall into, I won't say it wouldn't be, it's a much better atmosphere than Missouri. My point though is they're going to go from raucous environment to another raucous environment. And I think that this team gets up for those, you know, what are they, I saw that stat where they like 18-1 or whatever in their last, you know, against teams in the top 15 or whatever it is. I mean, like they play their best when they're in tough situations.
If you can't be ready to play, you're playing for a championship Wednesday night.
Yep, there's still kids at the end of the day.
I mean, yeah, but you, I mean, you've worked all summer long. If your coach, if you can't be ready to play with a championship on the line, I mean, it shouldn't matter. I get to your point, but Tennessee should be ready to play if they were in a parking lot with two people standing beside them, and as opposed to being, you know, backs against the wall underdog. I mean, this is a championship game on Wednesday night. I mean, both teams should be at an elite level Wednesday night. Now, the question is, can South Carolina handle that moment? You know, I get that. But, I mean, Tennessee, surely to goodness, will be ready to play.
If you win Wednesday, you're the one seed, no matter what happens against Kentucky.
Well, and you're a champion. I mean, you got a trophy.
You're a co-champion, yeah, at worst.
At worst, yeah. Hey, Rob, I do want to, before we get into a little bit of South Carolina and Kentucky that's coming up this week, I do want to ask you about Jamon Mayshak. And I know we spoke on him a little bit earlier. Austin mentioned him, but – you know, 8 points. He made both his 3-pointers that he shot. You know, when Tennessee took the lead for good, it was, you know, him making that shot in the corner, and he doesn't celebrate. He doesn't showboat. He gets back and picks off a pass and then turns it into points in the other way. A guy that was, I mean, you know better than me, but a guy that was probably getting around 8-9 minutes a game, you know, got 27 almost. He was guarding some guards. As Brent Hubbs said, that this is kind of a program win. I feel like that's just a program statement, if you will, for a guy that is a veteran. Just don't give up on him. We'll do whatever he can to help the team. And then he's rewarded in a massive game by being a huge difference in the ball game. I mean, Tennessee doesn't win that game without Jamon Mayshak, hands down.
Oh, no question. Now, he's played a little more than 8 or 9 minutes a game. You see, he's up around 15, but your point's well taken. He played 27 minutes.
His minutes were going down, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, played 10 minutes the game before. So he was not, you know, he didn't look like he was on the verge of playing 27 minutes. And you're right. I mean, he was big. I mean, Mark Sears, you know, scored some points, but he wasn't terribly efficient. And Jamai was a big part of that. Jamai was certainly a factor in, you know, what we're talking about, Alabama making three shots in the last 14 and a half minutes and did a little bit of everything. He had 4 assists. 6 rebounds, blocked a shot. The steal that you just referenced was huge to turn into the A-new bucket that kind of kept that run going. And you say he hit 2 3-pointers. He did, but one of them was massive. you know, there in the second half, it was late in the shot clock in the quarter during that little run when Tennessee erased that 8-point deficit. And, you know, I thought he just played with a lot of confidence. And, man, he competes hard. You know, Coach talks about it a lot, but I think guys do feed off Jamai because, I mean, he brings a different kind of intensity to the defensive end when he comes in. If he's checking in for – I mean, you know, Santi's a great defensive player, but, I mean, he's different. I mean, he's crafty. You know, he's a smart veteran, whereas Jamai can overwhelm some guys with his physicality, especially smaller guards, you know, because he can keep up with them with his quickness. He can bully him with his strength. And, man, he's a real – he's also plays the five a little bit in the pinch the other night. I mean, he's a super versatile guy that is really valuable. The kind of guy, you know, the kind of role player that really, really good teams have.
How difficult is it to, again, turn right back around, go to another hostile environment, and then come back home and play Kentucky? Again, I know we talked about it. You're playing for a championship. You should be getting up for this. It's exciting and all that. But, I mean, you know, you're at the end of a regular season. So, I mean, you know, the wear and tear is there. Coming off the win against Auburn, coming off a win at Alabama, just from, I guess, an emotional standpoint, how difficult is it? Or is it difficult at all to turn right back around and go right back at it, really good South Carolina team, and then, of course, finishing off against Kentucky. A huge week, another huge week ahead for Tennessee basketball.
I mean, I think it's really difficult for a lot of teams, but I think it goes back to what Hubbard was just talking about, this team's mental toughness that you saw in the second half at Alabama. I wanted to touch on this because I think it's really impressive. And last week in this podcast, we were all talking about, man, look at this four-game close of the season Tennessee's got, you know, with Auburn, Alabama, Kentucky, you know, South Carolina. And I think the kids, young men, excuse me, are, you see their maturity and how they didn't look at it as, oh my God, we got this, you know, huge four-game thing. They take it, it's cliche, but really one game at a time. I mean, I saw Sakai on the SEC Network the other night. Somebody asked him about celebrating, you know, the Alabama win. He's like, you know, we're not celebrating anything. We got to get ready for South Carolina. And I think, you know, that's not just, you know, coach speak on his part. I mean, I think that's really the way this team, their mentality is. I'll be really surprised if they're not ready. I mean, I'm not guaranteeing a win, but it won't be because it's the third tough game in, you know, 8 days or something like that.
Robin, I mean, how much harder is this game to play because of style of play? Because, I mean, Alabama, we all know what they wanted to do, right? They want to get up and down the floor. We know Kentucky wants to get up and down the floor. They all want to score. Tennessee, Rick Barnes will tell you at every turn, they want to play fast. This is a South Carolina team that likes to limit possessions. They like to work the clock. I mean, how mentally challenging is style of play in this game for Tennessee, particularly on the road?
Well, I think it can get frustrating if you're the team that wants to play faster. I mean, that's definitely, I mean, it's always been the case in basketball. I mean, it can, you know, it can frustrate you a little bit. And I mean, I think it's imperative that Tennessee, you know, it sounds elementary, but they make shots because Vanderbilt wants to play slow too. Tennessee made a bunch of shots and, you know, early in that one the last time out and ran them out of the gym. Now, they didn't do that in Nashville. But so, I mean, as elementary as it is, just, you know, making shots is important because you do want to get South Carolina out of their comfort zone, which is going to be tougher to do on the road. But, you know, we talk about it all the time with this team. And yeah, South Carolina got them at home, but Tennessee really can win playing a lot of different styles of basketball. I mean, the second half at Alabama was, you know, as you said, we're just all about toughness. You know, the second half at Auburn was, you know, just an offensive explosion from Dalton Connect. I mean, they can do a lot of different things. So, you know, I expect Tennessee to play well on the road. I mean, I think they'll deal with the style of play. And they can grind if they have to, and again, I just think they're built, you know, to win a lot of different ways, and because of that maturity, I don't worry about the, you know, the moment, you know, being too big for them or them, you know, getting frazzled by a big crowd. I don't think this team really gets affected by that, and Dalton Connect for sure doesn't get affected by it.
Another huge week coming up. Tennessee at South Carolina, 7 o'clock, and then back home against Kentucky, 4 o'clock on Saturday. Tennessee playing for an SEC championship on Wednesday. If you win one of these next two, you at least get a share of the regular season title and all the coverage over to VolQuest.com from Rob Lewis and Grant Ramey. Hey, we got plenty of football conversation to get into, plus the latest in Tennessee versus the NCAA. That is all coming up next as we continue on with the VolQuest podcast. But first, a word from our proud sponsors, Exterior Home Solutions.
Your roof, it's the most important protection against nature for your home or your business. That's why I trust the experts at Exterior Home Solutions.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
As always, a big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. You need a roof, siding, garage, windows, whatever that case may be, pick up the phone for a free estimate. You can give them a call today at 865-524-5888 or visit them online. That's exteriorhomesolutions.com. So talked a lot of hoops so far. Got plenty of coverage over at VolQuest.com, but we got coverage of everything Tennessee-related over at VolQuest.com. Recruiting, baseball, football, spring practice right around the corner. Yesterday you had the two new assistants being interviewed, and we had coverage of that over at VolQuest.com. But Brent, we've been asking kind of the balls in the NCAA's court, if you will. Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, won the injunction. And so what was the response going to be from the NCAA? Would they, you know, hunker down and come after Tennessee? Would they step back and regroup? Well, Friday of this past week, it came out that the NCAA is to pause all name, image, and likeness investigations with third parties for the time being. And that's more good news for the University of Tennessee.
Well, I mean, I don't see how they could have, Austin, how they could have proceeded with any kind of NIL investigation, given the ruling by Judge Corker in federal court. I mean, legally, that was not, I don't see any way that that was going to hold. Now, the question is, does the NCAA look into anything else with Tennessee? Because we know that this investigation that's been going on since Tennessee was trying to go to settle the last investigation involves more than just NIL. So the question is, does the NCAA pursue anything else with Tennessee? I don't think they had a choice on the NIL deal. I don't think that is the NCAA going, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to make a really bold decision here. I think that was their only stance was to pause NIL investigations. Maybe I'm missing something, but to me, that was their only option.
Yeah, 100% agree. You know, I think any of the other stuff is all such, you know, level three. Level, I mean, people, stuff that every school on the earth turns people in, or turns themselves in for. So, I mean, again, I think most of this is behind Tennessee. Now, could something pop up down the line? Sure, just like it could pop up at any school. But, you know, I think that the NCAA is feeling pretty neutered right now as they, you know, have lost court battle after court battle after court battle. So, you know, again, I think that, you know, this was a win for Tennessee and a big win for the university just based off the – yeah, I mean, they've had to pay some consulting fees to lawyers and retainers and stuff, but they didn't have to go to discovery. They didn't have to sue the NCAA themselves, things that would have cost the university way more than, you know, what little bit they've paid here just to, you know, kind of have, you know, a few people on retainer and that type of thing. So, you know, again, I think that this played out about as well as it could play out given the circumstance for Tennessee.
That's a good point, AP, because when you look at what much they paid in legal fees for the Jeremy Pruitt case, you know, and the discovery of the investigation for 12 or 14 months, whatever that ended up being, you know, this works out financially and this works out from a timing standpoint for Tennessee. It couldn't be any better than it's gone so far for Tennessee. I think that's, you know, you put it behind you and you're not mortgaging the farm to do it, so to speak, as well.
And put it behind you in a month, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, like, no, everybody sits here and we all said, this will take a while, this is going to take a while. But what we didn't account for was the state, when this first came out, the state, you know, getting the injunction, and that really just kind of squash the whole thing within a month's time.
Yeah, Tennessee had to pay for the investigation, and then he had to turn around. They got slapped with $7 or $5 million fine with the whole Jeremy Pruitt situation. So yeah, they've been spending some money here lately. So that's a win in that regard. let's reset the question as we do every other week here on the podcast. So what's next, Brent? What comes of this? What's the next step? What do fans need to be paying attention to be dialed into this whole situation? What's next?
Well, I don't think there's a step left for Tennessee. I mean, I think Austin put it, you know, exactly right. If you're going to come at Tennessee, you're talking about level two, level three stuff, more likely level three stuff. Tennessee's already self-imposed for both of those things that were involved in this, that were going to be in the notice of allegations, okay? I don't think the NCAA is going to anybody's campus to investigate anybody anytime soon for anything right now. I think for the NCAA, Rob and Austin, I mean, this has to be a straight up, we've got to get all of our important people in the same city for the first time in a long time and get in a room and figure out, like, okay, what are we going to do to save ourselves? What are we going to do to protect ourselves moving forward? Because this whole retro thing and reacting and punishing is just not working. To me, everything sits in front of the NCAA right now in terms of how they want to move forward. That's the way I see it. You know, maybe you guys see something totally different than where I'm at with it. But to me, it's all about the NCAA and their choices moving forward, right?
Well, I mean, I think they're at a crossroads. I mean, and the challenge is to, you know, how to, from my perspective, and I'm not an expert on all of it, but from my perspective, the challenge of them is, you know, how do they stay relevant? I mean, that was, they took a huge L in, you know, with this court, and it wasn't the only one. I mean, with the last loss to Tennessee, it was just been a string. It's been piling up. So, I mean, how do they stay relevant in what is a, you know, drastic and rapidly changing, you know, landscape in college athletics?
So you got Tennessee and the NCAA and what was some good news again for the University of Tennessee. And then over the weekend, you have Knox News reporting that Tennessee is starting a nonprofit right now that could transition into mobilizing paying student athletes in the future if they're, you know, for that, or, you know, setting the stage for a super subdivision breakaway for football. For, in layman's terms, Austin, what does this mean? I mean, the way I interpret it, Tennessee is, you know, trying to forecast the weather, seeing what's changing in college athletics, seeing where it's headed, trying to get in front of the A ball. And when things happen, they're going to be one of the better suited universities to cope with all this in the changing landscape that is NCAA and especially football.
Well, I mean, 11 of the 14 in the league schools already had a 501c3. Tennessee's more playing catch up in my regard, in this regard, in a lot of ways, and just being prepared, because all the other schools were going to be prepared had they done a hard shift hubs, you know, and Tennessee hadn't. Now Tennessee's going to be on a level playing field if they do the hard shift. It's still far fetched because you've got the Title IX stuff to think about if they take NIL in house. You know, does it become a thing where it's, you know, everybody kind of becomes an employee getting X amount, but the big money is still run through the collectives. Like what happens next? You know, I think, you know, for my liking, I think that there's still some more kind of layers and, you know, to the onion that have to be peeled back before we truly know kind of where this thing goes.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things in the 501c. I mean, part of this is not just about preparing for NIL. When you purchase things and you go through things in the states involved, I mean, there's a lot of red tape to get through.
I mean, look at Lindsey Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, it's why it took nine months to get a new pitch clock installed at Lindsey Nelson, much less something down the left field line. I mean, they ordered the pitch clock or went to bat to try to get the pitch clock in mid to late June, and they installed it in February. Because there's just a lot of red tape to go through. So part of it is that, just to kind of create a greater business efficiency with the 501c. That's why so many schools in the SEC had it, even before NIL came about.
Yes.
Now, I think the question becomes, moving forward with NIL, Rob, is legally, are you ever going to really be able to bring it in-house? Because I mean, how do you go to justify in-house that you're paying, you know, player X seven figures and then you're paying somebody else five figures? You know, I just think that you're going to bring a lot of potential problems in there. And this goes back to what I was saying months ago. the L's are piling up for the NCAA, but I don't think anybody's ready with a plan for what's next on either side. I don't think the NCAA is ready for what's next. I don't think college football is ready for what's next right now. I think that's what everybody's trying to figure out in this climate that we're living in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to add, but I mean, Hubbard, I bet it would vary from place to place. Maybe some places would see an advantage to bringing the collectives in house. I'm with you. I think that's messy and maybe a can of worms. I mean, who knows what the future holds? But for the time being, I think they're better served probably, working in close partnership with the member institutions.
Which is what, I mean, if you want to use an example of that, I mean, it's kind of what some teams have done with their broadcasting rights for years. Some schools have done, right? They it's a separate entity, but they work hand in hand with each other. And that may be where we are with NIL foreseeable future. It's just hard to see them saying, okay, let's bring it all in house.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, Hubbard, because, I mean, you have some employees – they're university employees that work, for the Vol Network and et cetera. I mean, I think that's something I hadn't thought about that could be a model that you see, something akin to that.
Just remember, though, there's only one Brandon Parks.
or at the least, you just have to be approved by the university, by the school.
I think where we're finally getting to is AP, we're stopping this song and dance of, can somebody endorse? And we've gotten to that point, but now we're completely past this. How do you endorse it? How strong can you be? It's like, it's okay for everybody to be paired up. I just don't know that you're going to bring everything under your state and university umbrella for your NIL. I think we're a ways away from that even being a remote possibility. That's me. You may have a better feel for that than I do. It feels like it's a long ways away.
Well, I think they'd love to. But how do they? I don't know. As you said, nobody's got a beat on figuring it out how to make it happen. I'd love to do a lot of things. That doesn't mean I can figure it out how to get it done. So, I mean, I think that's where we're at. I mean, I think they'd love to do that, but actually being able to do it and not have all these extra things go on once you do. Yeah, I think more in line with Hubs.
I think one thing's clear, though, and you see this and see this going on around the conference, but also, all these proposed, the college football playoff contract's up in 2 years, and you're seeing all these proposed, for the next contract and all that. And it's, the 3-3-2-2-1 model expanding to 14 teams, the SEC and the Big Ten get an automatic bye. SEC and Big Ten's going to make up 40% of the field. Just planting the seeds. Again, I don't know if it's 5 years or 10 years, but you're just – Sankey's just planting the seeds here to eventually, in my opinion, to break away for football. And I think that, Brent, I think that's evident with what's going on right now in these conversations about the college football playoff.
Well, but again, the only person that has to be blamed for that should be the NCAA. I mean, they got to look mm-hmm. at the mirror at themselves and see where this is at. I mean, there's a reason Greg Sankey and the Big Ten have gotten together, right? There's strength in numbers, right, Rob Lewis? And the two most powerful numbers are together. And they are going to basically saying, we'll put this together for you. Okay. And we've got all the power, by the way. That's why the SEC and the Big Ten are talking about giving themselves buys in future playoff scenarios, yep. Right? Because they got all the juice, Rob.
Yeah. But I don't know all the ins and outs of that whole proposal, but that to me, it just looks like, hey, by the way, we're getting two extra teams in and they're getting a buy, or we're going to go ahead and do our own thing, which may be coming anyway. But for the time being, oh, by the way, our champs are getting in automatically and they're getting
a buy. By the way, we get the biggest piece of the revenue pie.
I mean, it's a power play. It's a power play because, I mean, they've got the power. I mean, the thinking of, any concept of a college football playoff that the SEC or, Big Ten didn't participate in is, I mean, it's laughable. I mean, to even think about. I mean, they, like Tupper said, I mean, they have all the juice. And I mean, I think we can all agree that Greg Sankey's a pretty savvy dude. So I would imagine that however this all plays out, I'd say it's the bottom line is SEC universities are going to end up with more money you know, when they cut the check at the end of the year.
Maybe AP, they're going back the old school way. And they're going to revert back to the old pre-NFL days where it's the AFL and the NFL. And they have their own separate entities, right? You can one group of conferences can win the AFL conference or the AFL championship, and then somebody else wins the Super Bowl and the NFL championship before they all merge. I don't know. You've got the haves and the have-nots, and that divide is only getting wider, is what it feels like to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Big 12 and ACC and the defunct Pac-12 or Pac-2, they're like the XFL, and the other ones are the actual NFL.
Yeah. Last thing from over the weekend, you had Ross Dellinger reporting that college football is expected to add 3 new things. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but a couple of things that we've talked about that's been in conversation the last couple of years. Helmet communication, kind of what's that going to look like? Tablets on the sideline and at halftime, and a 2-minute warning. A 2-minute warning is nothing but an extra, commercial break to make more money. There's never enough money in the world for these people, right? So that's what that is. I don't hate it. I mean, I watch NFL football, so I'm used to it. Helmet communication, I think that's interesting. And again, we've talked about it before. How much would a guy like Josh Heupel even want helmet communication? Because that's outside of his norm. It's outside of the way he's been doing things. And they go so fast. I'm sure he would, of course, adapt, but I find that one interesting, Brent, is helmet communication and how that could be incorporated in the future, specifically for Tennessee.
Well, I don't think you're going to see those guys dressed like the Wiggles on the sidelines go away anytime soon. You're going to have the stoplight guys over there in their blue.
The chipmunks.
Whatever they are. I think to play fast, I mean, Josh Heupel's been, I've asked him about it twice and he's kind of sidestepped it both times, but he did say at the bowl site that basically he was like, yeah, I'm not sure how that works for fast paced teams. I think the side of the ball that's going to like it more than offense, maybe the defensive coordinators,
yeah.
Particularly because teams don't huddle up and this allows you to communicate, to help create that communication. They don't have to. How many times did we see Alabama the last couple of years playing Tennessee where the DBs turned to the sideline getting a call and he gets beat because he's not ready to play? And I know it happened in Tuscaloosa 2 years ago when Tennessee played down there. I think the defensive guys will like it as much as the offensive guys because it would allow them to verbally communicate, for their players so that they can stay with their eyes on their opponent and get a call that way. I know everybody doesn't wear it, but I think it's easier to communicate without everybody having to turn to the sideline and get a call while somebody's going fast. I think defensive guys are going to like it.
I agree with that. The tablet thing is hilarious to me because, high schools have had tablets on the sidelines for years. What are we doing? Welcome to the world. And then what was the other one, Eric?
Two-minute warning.
All that's going to turn into, especially in big rivalry games, is like the proverbial timeout with 30 seconds to go just to get the crowd revved up one last time, right? That all that does is slow. And then during these blowout games, it's going to be atrocious.
Well, what you would hope that would be like a break in a break, which it's not going to be. That'll be a full CBS. That'll be a full for the Big Ten. Welcome to those 2:45 or 3:05 commercial breaks that are going to happen, at a meaningless time in a blowout game at the end. But again, I let's get past the idea of speeding the game up, right? We're not doing that in college football. We can change clock rules, everything else. The games weren't any faster, Rob Lewis, this year than they were before the new clock rules came into play. Maybe 5 minutes here, but what's the difference between 3:50 and 3:55 on the length of the game, right? The games just aren't going to get any faster.
Yeah, the commercial length and the three minute commercial break. Can feel like a really long time, and when they come so often, I don't know what I don't think there is an answer because who is ever going to say, who's ever going to turn down, revenue money like Eric was just saying. There's not enough of it. That's the whole reason these 2 minutes are in existence. So I'm not a fan of it, but I just don't see it getting any better.
Well, and nothing finishes on time, Eric, right? Like this podcast, right? We don't ever finish on time. That's Austin's texting right now.
How about a college basketball game? Every night on ESPN, yeah.
We're moving this game to the app.
We're going to tip at 7 to 9. You're never going to tip at 9, no. ever.
No. And you're not going to – and if you tip at 9:10, you're going to be starting on an alternative channel. And they hope to get you hope to get you to the first TV timeout. Hope to join you by the first TV timeout is basically how that works.
A lot of times by the time you get to your to the correct channel, I mean, it's like 12 minutes to go in the first half. I mean, you've missed almost half of the first half. Yeah. What are you going to say, AP?
I was going to say that I laughed the other night. I literally took some trash out during the after 16 timeout to start the second half, and it was 9:28. And I'm like, well, there's no way they're getting this done in the next 32 minutes, right? I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, and it's like that every time.
Yeah.
But the only reason the Tennessee-Alabama game the other night had a five-minute slide instead of a 10-minute slide and starting on an alternate channel was Virginia decided to no-show at Duke. So there was no – I mean, there were no fouls down the stretch. I mean, they played the last 3 minutes of that game like they were playing, you know, a rec game in an alumni gym somewhere or a student gym because the game was over. But you don't have that happen very often.
Meanwhile, I went my daughter's basketball team went to the Lady Vols game last Thursday night, and that game started at 7, and I was walking out of Food City Center at 8:50, like the total opposite, and the game was over. I stayed all the way to the end. My kids wanted to stay all the way to the light, to the buzzer.
Rob, when is the men's game going to go to quarters?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And I think most coaches, I know Coach Barnes will be fine with it. It's, you know, it's really odd. I mean, I don't think about it very often, but it's really odd when you think about every level of basketball, but not except for men's college basketball, you know, runs on the quarters.
I was driving to the baseball game yesterday, and I had the radio on, and Lady Vols were on. I thought that thought for the first time in a while. I'm like, wow, men's basketball literally is the only level in the game of basketball that's not gone to quarters yet. But anyway, conversation for another day. A lot going on over the weekend and a whole lot going on right now at VolQuest.com. No better time than right now to join us if you're listening but not a member of our sites. You know, the War Room is one of the best things we do each and every week. Get insider information that you can't get anywhere else. Plus, we drop notes on the board, the General's Quarters, all week long. Got baseball coverage, plenty of basketball coverage, recruiting coverage constantly, football coverage, spring practice in 2 weeks, new assistants were introduced to the media yesterday. All that and more, plus video content, audio content, written content, every single day. It's over at VolQuest.com. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Rob Lewis, I am Eric Kane. Thanks so much for joining us here. A big thank you to Exterior Home Solution. Pick up the phone and give them a call today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We'll be back for the Mailbag Podcast later in the week. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Podcast every week here on VolQuest.